Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
So here's the question. Do we have any more information about whether or not Cam Newton is coming to the Chargers or not than we did before that? Because he very artfully did not tell us coming or going about Cam. It's still totally up in the air.
Well, look, here's what I would say. And Coach Lynn is smart enough, been around the block a long time. He loves Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor was with him in Buffalo. Do I think Tyrod Taylor is a capable NFL quarterback to get you through some things? Yes. Is Tyrod Taylor an NFL starter for some teams? Yes. But is Tyrod Taylor a deep run into the playoffs, championship caliber quarterback? No. And if you listen to Coach Lynn, as I said to you before many times, along with knucklehead, nappy hair Raj, is that Cam Newton is a starter in the National Football League. Coach Lynn even said such. He even said it. But there's not enough spaces open for him. People got young quarterbacks on contracts, or they got older quarterbacks that's established on big contracts, so there's no room for him. But he's not going to tell us, I don't like Tyrod Taylor, I need to sign Cam Newton, even though I drafted Justin Herbert. What happens in these situations with a guy like Cam is they sit in a wait to see what they have, and if they're comfortable with what they have, then they go out and sign if they're not somebody. It happens all the time. When you look up and you're like, well, damn, they signed that receiver, or they signed that defensive player, or they signed that guy. Yeah, because the guys that they had, they didn't feel good about. They don't have that luxury right now because there's no offseason. What are you going to do, talk to him virtually on virtual
Zoom.
Reality Zoom and talk to him? I mean, that's, okay, you need to see him compete in practices, throw the ball against live competition to be able to judge on whether or not he's the option for you moving forward. That won't come until the summertime. When they get into training camp and they go to looking and they get back in those meetings after practice and they watching the film and they're looking and they're talking, and all of a sudden they sit there and say, you know, if we just had this guy, man, he'll kick us over the top. That's what'll happen. Now, I don't know whether or not they'll sign him. He never, ever said they wouldn't, and he never said that they would.
Well, you know, it is interesting that, you know, we all assume that the Chargers is the number one landing spot for Cam for a variety of reasons, whether it's fit as a QB, whether it's the branding possibilities, whether it's the simple fact that they appear to be the one of a handful of teams that could still use his services as a starting QB. But the way that he talks about Justin, I'm leaning now more towards the fact that he's going to be satisfied with letting this young man learn a season behind Tyrod Taylor and taking over, and that'll be that. Now, personally, I don't know if that's the formula in terms of getting eyebrows to be curious about your team, but in terms of stability in this unstable time, it makes the most sense. You know, you don't have to restructure any kind of offense or anything because Tyrod Taylor's been there. He knows the system. He knows the coaches. He knows the players. So it makes an easier transition for an unstable season.
Doesn't it matter, though? I mean, we can talk about the balance of development versus Tyrod Taylor and everything else, but Justin Herbert, his playing time for the 2020 season will be determined by one thing, whether or not the Chargers are winning. If the Chargers are winning, because I don't think any of us expect Herbert to be the starter in week one, Tyrod Taylor's going to get the opportunity to be the starter of that team. And if they're in the hunt, if they're winning games, Justin Herbert doesn't get on the field. If they're not, if they fall into that second half of teams and they're not competing for a wild card, they're not competing for a division championship, then you're going to see Herbert. Of course he will.
Well, Herbert will play mid-season if they out the playoff mix.
That's what I'm saying.
He'll play.
You can talk about the development
all you
want. I wouldn't
give a damn if it's Newton quarterbacking or whoever. He will play mid-season if they're not winning.
It's the record. It's not the development time, the timetable on when you think he's ready. It's when you have already figured out that Tyrod Taylor is not going to take your team to the playoffs. That's when Justin Herbert all of a sudden becomes, quote-unquote, ready.
Yes, absolutely. That's what you do with young quarterbacks, and that's called bringing them along, not forcing them into a situation. If you are a team like somebody, I don't know, give me a bad team that's not going anywhere.
Bengals.
You throw the Bengals, you throw the quarterback in the fire now. Go ahead. Go ahead, because it doesn't matter. But if you have a Charger team that has one piece that's missing that may help you, like the quarterback spot, you play the guy that gives you the best chance to win immediately. And that is Tyrod Taylor for a number of reasons. One, that you mentioned, LZ, about the timeline of learning the offense and doing certain things. He's ahead of Justin Herbert and anybody else that would come in. They don't have to change the system for a quarterback at all, because everybody is going to be the style quarterback in which they like, so they don't have to change their system. We're not all of a sudden going to Lamar Jackson here. We're going to a guy that knows the system. Want to do, who's been there, who's ahead of Justin Herbert and Tyrod Taylor, who now gives it 5-6 weeks, see what it is, and then if it's not looking like anything, then you go to Justin Herbert. Then you say, okay, it's time to play the rookie, because what will happen is the boo birds will come out, the commentators, the journalists, the columnists, the LA Times beat writers with dreads, all of these dudes, they'll start writing and saying, it's time to see Herbert. It's time to see Herbert. What are we waiting on? The season is lost. You know how it goes, LZ. Or not?
Maybe we lost him. Look, it's exactly what happened. No, but Key, what you just described, that's exactly what happened with Jared Goff. The second the Rams were a fifth, because keep in mind, it's hard to remember because it feels like a lifetime ago. That's first season with Jared Goff and Case Keenum as their quarterbacks. The Rams got off to a 3-1 start. They played like crap, but they got off to a 3-1 start, and they were in the mix until about week 9 or 10, just because of that good start. It wasn't until they were basically officially out of it that they decided, okay, let's go with Jared Goff. The second you're out of the picture, you go with the kid. If you stay in the picture, you go with the vet. It's that easy.
Exactly. I mean, it happens all the time. I remember I go back to 1998, and this is a little bit different because it was two veteran guys, but an unproven veteran in Glenn Foley, who at the end of the day, in 1998, we signed Vinny Testaverde right before training camp, maybe I think it was, or during training camp, we signed Vinny. Mm-hmm. We brought Vinny in during training camp. And Bill, I remember Bill walking up to me and says, you're going to like this. I'm like what? Don't you worry. This guy's going to be able to get you the ball. And I kept thinking he was talking about Rodney Pete. And then all of a sudden, Vinny Testaverde shows up. I'm like, oh, snap. You know, but guess who came out as the starter? Glenn Foley. Because Foley had been there the prior year, knew the offense, knew everything. But Vinny was going to get caught up to speed. Once Vinny got caught up to speed and we wind up losing a game or two and started looking real. We had a team, a playoff caliber run team, but once Glenn started looking real bleak, Bill was like, nah, we ain't getting ready to lose this season. Vinny.
Well, that's the rub, though, Key, right? The one variable in this whole thing is you're looking at it, and maybe it's the Glenn Foley Testaverde model, but let's stick with the Chargers for a sec. Let's say the Chargers play their first 6 games and they're 3-3, and the Chiefs are out 5-1 or 6-0, and they're looking up at them. And the Raiders are what we think of. Maybe the Raiders are 5-2, and you're in it, but you're thinking, okay, I'm still sort of in it, but I'm also not where I need to be. Do you try to go with the other guy thinking, hey, maybe this will actually be better? I know he's behind. I know he's a rookie. I know he's inexperienced, but this, the path we're on right now, a 500 football team, is not going to work. Let's try it just to see if we can catch lightning in a bottle.
You do that. But the problem, here's the problem that I have with this. I'm worried about the coach. I'm worried about the coach. I'm worried about a coach that's gone to the playoffs once. I'm worried about a new stadium. I'm worried about the fan base, the generation of what fans will think if this team is not making a strong statement within the conference, what they think about the coach. Because when the coach is holding on to a quarterback that he had in Buffalo and believing in him but not getting it done, spells doom for a coach that does not have a 5-year deal. So I worry about the coach from that standpoint. That's why I lean toward picking up a guy like Cam. So because if you pick up a guy like Cam and you doing everything with a guy like that, you're going to win.
Oh, look, if I'm Anthony Lynn and my choice, let's just, in a vacuum, my choices to play the next season are I can play with Cam Newton I can play with Tyrod Taylor, or I can play with Justin Herbert. Is there a coach alive that wouldn't pick Cam Newton?
I mean, that's the whole thing. So I don't know what the hesitation is. I don't care that you drafted her. It's fine you drafted Justin Herbert. Okay, he 2-3 years from now, he can play. But I'm talking about right now where you can try to seize a moment. Right now. Yeah, you ain't going to be able to seize this moment with Tyrod Taylor, in my opinion. I watched him play. I saw him last year.
He's
when he got
okay.
in the games.
He's okay. He's average.
He's okay, but he's also is available. And you got to wonder how much of Cam's recent injury history is also playing with this, especially as you talk about the fact that, you know, he may not necessarily want to take X number of dollars to come in as a backup or even as a starter. He may have a certain number in place. And because
that's
of his recent injury
though.
History.
But that's something that different. When you start talking about money and things of that nature, then okay, that's a different deal. If he's trying to get $20 million, that's different. You ain't trying to play football then because they ain't giving you $20 million right now.
Well, the Cam piece.
We don't know why he hasn't been signed. So so you got to assume that may be part of it, that maybe he's asking for too much money. Also, maybe the fact that his recent injury history, also his style of play may not be what, you know, some of these coaches want. If the man says he's coming with Tyrod Taylor, I understand that Cam would probably be a better choice, but he's not comfortable with that because if you said Tyrod Taylor and then you go get Cam and then Cam is hurt after two games, you got to go back to Tyrod Taylor all over again anyway, but now you're out of more money.
I'm happy with Tyrod, but look, man, Cam was hurt last year. Let's not make it seem like Cam then missed 20 games a year. He was hurt last year. He was hurt last year. He missed the season last season. He missed the entire season. That was one time. He missed some games before, like a lot of quarterbacks do. I don't want to make it sound like the dude walk down the street and then falls because he can't walk anymore. But
all right,
what I was going to say before you talk about the last dance is that Tyrod Taylor, if Coach Lynn likes it, I love it.
Don't miss, Key. Episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance on May 3rd. That is, of course, at 6 o'clock on ESPN, live on the ESPN app as well. And if you need to catch up, Coach Lynn talking to you right now, episodes 1 through 4, you can stream them live on ESPN On Demand and the ESPN app as well. We'll continue our conversation about quarterbacks, and there might have been a method to the madness in Green Bay. A longtime Packer observer has a thought. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. You guys ready for a this date in sports history? You ready for one?
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
1986, Roger Clemens became the first major league pitcher ever to strike out 20 batters in one game. And man, Roger Clemens,
did he do that before?
Nope. I believe Gooden got to 18. He did not get to 20. Clemens was the first to get to 20. And I wish I could kind of compartmentalize. Like, for whatever reason with Clemens, I don't think of the incredible pitcher that he was prior to him going crazy on the performance enhancers. I can only think of that meat-headed guy at the end of his career throwing bats at Mike Piazza.
You know, I don't know. Roger Clemens was such a dog to me. Until he got caught up into the steroid thing, then I kind of lost all respect for his game. Once the steroid stuff it came out, I just kind of was like,
"Well, think about it." When he was with the Red Sox, he was the best pitcher in baseball for a good period of time. He was amazing, and then he started to fade, and then he went to Toronto and became what you just described, Key. That part of his career is the part that makes him, to use your example. Dwight Gooden and Roger Clemens were basically the same guy in the 80s. And then all of a sudden, Dwight Gooden's path went a different way, and then Roger Clemens found whatever it is he found that made him that guy. And we look at him totally differently.
Well, they both found something that appeared to be outside of the body that changed their narrative. One went up, the other one went down.
Not outside the body, in the body. Yeah.
What a mess. Both of them. For different reasons, but both of them. Here's a paragraph from Bob McGinn. Bob McGinn's covered the Packers for 38 years. Okay, so he knows that building and he knows how that building works. This is what he wrote about why the Packers selected Jordan Love with their first-round draft pick. Public niceties aside, my sense is Matt LaFleur, fresh from a terrific 13-3 baptismal season, simply had had enough of Aaron Rodgers' act and wanted to change the narrative. With a first-round talent on the roster, the Packers would gain leverage with their imperial quarterback and his passive-aggressive style. If the Packers do indeed want to become a running team next season, they surely wouldn't want Rodgers rocking the boat, becoming even more difficult to coach. So what he's saying is that the Packers not only took their quarterback of the future and put him in place, so they have the guy when and slash if Aaron Rodgers is done, but rather they drafted him not just because of that, but so they could leverage him and say, dude, you're not running the show around here. We are.
Not going to happen. First of all,
that's different.
First of all, you didn't trade for Leonard Fournette, so you don't have no backs on your roster that would lend you to becoming the San Francisco 49ers running attack. There's nothing that says that. So if you're taking that approach, and that approach is 3 yards in a cloud of dust, all Aaron Rodgers got to do is say, I'm the baddest man on the planet. They're not allowing me to throw the football. This is why we're 2-7. Now what? Now what?
Well, he is definitely not the kind of person who's going to say it directly like that. He's going to say it.
Well, he may not say it directly, but he'll say enough. Way. He'll say enough, though, LZ, to where he get it to you, you'll say it for him.
Well, I think that's the overall point, is that they're sick and tired of his passive-aggressive way of communicating. And to say it the way that you just said it is just more of the same, passive-aggressive. Remember, early part of this season, multiple times he said, we have a defense, we have a defense. And you knew exactly what he was saying about the offense.
Oh, absolutely. When they won their first game, they jumped up and down on the defensive coordinator. We get it. But you drafting a quarterback, trying to send a message to Aaron Rodgers by drafting a quarterback, is the wrong message to send to a dude that has you cap-strapped, that you owe money to. He can have you out of the building. He's running the city right now. Not –
it
Matt
may
LaFleur.
Be a bad message to send, but that doesn't mean they're not sending it. We can argue about whether or not it's a smart idea. I don't think anybody's going to argue that picking a fight with him at this point in his career is a smart thing to do. This is why the whole idea of drafting Jordan Love in the first place, it was such a head-scratcher, because Aaron Rodgers, even if he's not the best quarterback in football, he's damn close. He's really close. He's still that guy, like you were saying, Key. So that they did this, for whatever reason they did it, it didn't help the Packers get better. It didn't help Aaron Rodgers add weapons to the offense. That everything that they did was either for the future or to yank his chain a little bit, neither one of which
makes
any
sense. Right? That's stupid to do that. Because what you're doing is you're getting ready to kill yourself. You're getting ready to commit suicide by doing that. By poking the bear for no reason at all, other than trying to put him in line and play games. Remember what I've always said about coaches? They do stupid stuff. And they will do – remember I always tell you, they will do things like I was talking to you about Sean McVay. I told you Sean
McVay. I agree with you. It would be stupid, but that doesn't mean that's not why they did it.
No, I understand that. But remember I always said about Sean McVay when we started talking about the Todd Gurley stuff. I'm like, Sean might be doing stuff even though he want to show you he can win without you. He's taking a chance. And he's okay with that because he's out to try to prove something. This is the same way the Green Bay Packers are. They want to put the pressure on the quarterback by not giving him certain tools, which I understand that they may feel they have other players on their roster that we don't know that they feel good about watching in practice and in film in certain games that they think these guys are going to develop, so they didn't have to go out there and grab weapons like everybody is saying. But then taking a quarterback to try to sear Aaron Rodgers is the wrong way to approach it, is my whole point.
Which is why I don't agree with that synopsis. I understand that the Athletic reporter has been around this team for a couple of decades and is deeply embedded. But it's just hard for me to believe that with your all-world and very expensive quarterback, you're going to use a first-round draft pick solely for the purpose of sending a message. Like, that to me is a heavy price to pay for messaging. I can understand flirting with Cam Newton, Now, that to me is something different. Like, let that name float out there as someone you may bring in as a backup. That to me sends a message, and it doesn't cost you a first-round draft pick if that was the case. Okay. That's the reason why I don't agree with it.
I agree with both of these things. And so my point is, as LZ, like you said, this is a bad plan. If the idea is to send a message to Aaron Rodgers, you're going to do it by lighting a first-round pick on fire, potentially. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But that also doesn't mean that that's not why they did it. You know what I mean? That just because it's a bad plan doesn't mean that that wasn't the plan. That to Key's point, these guys make crazy decisions all the time. I mean, you just said it a second ago, Key. Todd Gurley's an Atlanta Falcon. I mean, the crazy stuff happens. And I get that Gurley isn't Aaron Rodgers, but Todd Gurley was one of the best players in the league 2 years ago. I mean, and now all of a sudden he's gone. Crazy stuff happens all the time. Aaron Rodgers' cap number is going to prevent him from having to go anywhere else. But it just seems that there's really no other explanation for taking Jordan Love there, moving up to get him, because they're not going to play him. Aaron Rodgers is not going to not play behind Jordan Love. That's not going to happen. So why do it? If it's not the message, why?
Well, because like I said before, you got the quarterback sitting there. Remember, I told you, I said you got him sitting there. Okay, we build these guys up. Go back to the draft beginning and oh, he's up. Tua's way ahead of him, or he's this, he's that. They're moving him around. Oh, look, I told you, Trav, they're going to move him up. Oh, now all of a sudden Jordan Love is right there with Justin Herbert. Oh, Justin Herbert is right there with Tua. Tua's right there with Jordan Love. Oh, he's going to go in the top six picks. They're going to – and then, he's dropping. Well, he never was up there. He ain't dropping. He went where he was supposed to go within that window. He was supposed to go within that 18 to 28 window. He was going to go within them 10 or so picks. And at the end of the day, Green Bay said, you know what, let's not take a chance on somebody getting him before us, even though those teams in front of us don't necessarily need a quarterback. They may be thinking the same way we're thinking.
But they don't need a quarterback. They don't need him. I 5 years from now, they might need him, but they don't need him right now.
Did the Packers need him when Aaron Rodgers, when Brett Favre was there?
Brett Favre was far closer to the end of the line than Aaron Rodgers is.
No, that's not true. Remember Aaron Rodgers. Yes. Remember Brett Favre played another 4 years, I think it was.
Brett Favre.
Sure, another after four with Green Bay.
Brett Favre was awful when they drafted Aaron Rodgers. Flat out awful.
No, he wasn't awful. No, I ain't going to say he was awful. I'm not going to sit here and say
awful,
that.
He was awful, man.
He wasn't.
He was
Brett Favre still when they drafted Aaron Rodgers. And even to the point where they still was getting ready to keep him when, at the end, and then Brett Favre was playing I retire, come back, retire games. And they said, you know what? Never mind, man. We got this dude.
I think Brett Favre threw for 30 interceptions the year they drafted Aaron Rodgers.
I'm looking it up right here. I'm trying to figure this entire thing
out. You do understand Aaron Rodgers in the last several years ain't actually been like lights out. He's had some moments, but he ain't been lights out to the point
he's thrown for more than 50 touchdowns and 6 interceptions the last 2 seasons.
But Brett Favre hasn't been lights out though. He hasn't been lights out. Damn the statistics. I'm talking about his in-game performances at certain crucial times in games. That's what I'm talking about.
He was coming off of a 30-touchdown, 17-interception season when they made that draft. So
And then he played how many years after that?
In Green Bay?
Yeah.
3 more seasons.
So he played 3 more years in Green Bay, then went on to play another 3 or 4 whatever with other teams throughout the league. My point is, Aaron Rodgers got about 3 more years to 4 years left in Green Bay. It's the right time to take a quarterback.
Didn't they draft Aaron Rodgers in 2005?
Let's come back and talk about this in a second. We'll continue the conversation. That's coming up next. More Brett Favre, more Aaron Rodgers, and Jordan Love. I can't believe Jordan Love is a part of that as well. It's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
you know, had a couple of minutes there to think about it. And the more I think about it, the more it does not make sense that they take that they took Jordan Love where they took him. I get wanting a backup quarterback. I get assets. But the Packers, their window right now is relatively small. They were in the NFC Championship game last year. They have one of the best quarterbacks in football. The glaring need that they have was to get Rodgers and Davante Adams some help, and that they didn't do it. I don't understand why you're preparing for 2025 when 2020 could be a Super Bowl run.
Yeah, but sometimes you're satisfied with what you have in certain skill positions or certain depth at certain positions on a team. So you don't go out and get that. Like, we feel like they might have needed to upgrade, but they may feel like a guy like Equanimeous St. Brown is the same when healthy as somebody in the draft that they could have gotten. So they say to themselves, we got that on our team already.
Do you think Aaron Rodgers feels that way? No, because that's what we're talking about. We can talk about what we think.
You know, I don't know what Aaron feels, because Aaron certainly hasn't said, well, I wish they would have gotten a receiver, or I wish they would have gotten a tight end, or I wish they wouldn't have got, you know, he hasn't said that.
But the idea of all the things that you could need, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, backup quarterback is not at the top of the list. It's not on the list.
You don't want it to be at the top of the list. If I'm a receiver, I don't want them drafting another big X. I don't want that. There's no need to go get me a 4-2 dude to lift the top off of the coverage.
When you look back at the NFC Championship game and you try to find reasons as to why the team lost, you know, right out the gate, you look and you go, well, they didn't score any points in the first half. They were down 27-0 before you could even blink. And so that automatically puts a spotlight on the offense. What was Aaron Rodgers doing? Well, he was 31 of 39.
You do understand he played against San Francisco's defense.
So what did that 31
look like? So Kirk Cousins had a bunch of weapons on the offensive side, too. They didn't. You see what I'm saying, though, LZ? Kirk Cousins in Minnesota offense is ridiculous.
All I'm saying is that when you look at the questions about Green Bay, because this is a Green Bay conversation. 31 to 39. Well, when did that 31 come, those 31 completions? What do they look like? If you're saying you looked at the tape and you looked at Aaron Rodgers in particular and you looked at the overall offense and you're saying, you know what, our issue wasn't we didn't have the right personnel, then I'm going to go and say, okay, well, that's what your assumption was. But from the outside looking in, if you didn't score in the first half, but your QB was 31 of 39, that tells me most of those completions came when they softened the defense. And that means maybe you do need help on the offense, which is why I don't think they should have been satisfied with what they already have and that they should have looked to the draft to try to make the offense better.
Let me try this a different way, too. Because when you brought up the Vikings, it made me think of something. The Packers got within a game of the Super Bowl, and part of it, they ran into a really good team in San Francisco that had an amazing defense. They go to the Super Bowl, and the 49ers are in that game, but the reason that game broke open was two. Number one, Patrick Mahomes is that dude. So is Aaron Rodgers. But it broke open because the Chiefs have so many weapons that eventually one of those guys broke free, they hit that big play, and the game turned. The Packers have the quarterback piece, but they don't have the other pieces.
It broke open because the guy calling the play is on the other side. Was scared, you know what, and that's Shanahan. So he didn't allow his quarterback to quarterback his team to victory. He held him back. That's why the game broke wide open. You allowed Kansas City to play it. You allowed Kansas City to play catch up because you got spooked and became ultra conservative.
But it wasn't just that, Key. They hit a couple of really big plays at really big moments because they had explosive playmakers on offense. It was not just Shanahan sitting on the ball. It was because the Chiefs went off with some.
Yeah,
but big
when
you're
sitting, but again, as you know, pre, post, and halftime, when you do something that counters the opponent, that opponent is going to react a certain way. So when you don't start to push the envelope, you've given that opponent hope that they getting ready to catch you and pass you because they going to start calling it different. If I put points on the board, they got to call it different then. Now they got to go all out a certain way. But if I'm going to go three runs in a cloud of dust and I'm going to get stuffed, I'm giving that team hope now. It's like, oh, okay, we're going to get the ball on the 50, opposed to getting it on the 20.
George Sedano, Crosstalk, coming up next.
Hey, it's Crosstalk.
Yes, with George Sedano, my man, Georgie. Give me some gossip out there, George. I know you got some good stuff out there. You're a journalist. Give me some news about Major League Baseball. Give me something.
I love the Major League Baseball plan, though I would tinker it a little bit. I'm curious to see what you guys think. The story that came out yesterday in USA Today, basically three divisions, right? Both East divisions, both Central divisions, both West divisions playing against each other in the American League and National League. So instead of having all those teams bunched up together, why wouldn't you just simply play your division regularly and then just play the one division in two rounds of interleague play and just play your division more? Like, would that be more interesting to you, or would you rather see them play all nine of those teams all season long?
I'd rather play all nine. Yeah, yes. I'd do all nine.
Okay.
It's close proximity, travel's easy. Why not? Why not do all nine? I mean, give some, shake it up. The world is different right now anyway, right? Until we get back to some sort of normal routine. So let's just shake it up. And if it doesn't work after this year, go back to the normal format.
I get that. My only thing was just like, I think it would create even more intense rivalries within the division, right? Like, I think that if you have to see the Giants 20 times or 25 times as opposed to what you normally get, which is what, like 17 or 18 times? Like, just those extra games of rivalries I thought would be interesting is the only, and I'm not trashing their thing now. I'm just curious if you had more rivalry games, would that intensify things a little more?
Well, you know what? You don't want to get rid of the rivalry games. You want to try to figure out a way at least to play a couple of them, right?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You would add more in that sense, in my scenario.
If this was a situation, though, in which, let's say the league was a little bit smaller, and so the star power and its intensity was a little bit greater, then I wouldn't mind. But I don't want to see the San Diego Padres like 25 times. I just
hey, Manny Machado, baby. They're actually going to be pretty good, Elsie.
I just don't want to see. Listen, I love Kill Bill Volumes 1 and 2. But yeah. I also love the other movies, too. So variety is the spice of life, even with games. And so I just want to see a mix, you know. I hear what you're saying, George, but, yeah, I don't want to see the Padres 25 times. No offense, San Diego, in case you're listening.
No, take offense, San Diego, because clearly he was shading you.
Well, no, I wouldn't mind seeing them a bunch. They just rotate. It's just, look, it's ball, man, right? It's just ball. You're just watching baseball. I'm watching the Padres. I'm watching the Giants. I'm watching ball.
If that's my only choice is to watch the Padres 25 to 50 times or no baseball at all, then fine, I'll do it.
But you have to schedule.
I would rather have nine.
But you have to schedule it so that it's not a ninth, not a doubleheader, but a nine header where they're not playing. Where they're not playing all back to back to back to back to back to back. You got to spread it out.
It doesn't sound like, though, there's a ton of logistical difference between playing the Padres 25 times and playing the Padres 12 times and the A's 12 times. It's basically the same thing logistically. So why not have a little variety in the scheduling as opposed to I got these four opponents that I'm going to play. If the difference is nothing or that, I'll take that. But it doesn't sound like there's a difference between nothing or these two things. Give me the better with more variety.
Sure, and I get that. I'm just saying that you could still have the interleague play. You just would have more games within your division. Like that's the only thing. Only because I think it would intensify stuff, but it's just a thought. Let me ask you guys this, because you guys talked to Steve Kerr the other day. I know that yesterday he did another media outlet. I don't know I don't even know anymore who's talking to who anymore. Like, it's just everyone's talking to everybody at this point. But he basically let the cat out of the bag, didn't he? Or maybe he didn't. I don't know about how. It seems like the way he phrased things yesterday about how his team is basically in off-season mode, that when we get back to the NBA, that it feels like it's just going to be the playoff teams. Is that how you interpreted it? Because that's how I interpreted it.
100%.
Listen, man, they were 15-50. He's been in the off-season, I would say, since December anyway. So I can see him not wanting to rush back to start this season, you know, and just wanting to replace in the rear view. But to save the NBA season, I would much rather they just start with the postseason anyway. Give us some time to get the guys back in shape and just start with the postseason.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say just start with the postseason. What I would say do is play about five games, about five games or so.
The races were decided.
Even if the races were decided, sort of treat it like a preseason almost to get these guys acclimated to getting back on the floor in real live competition.
Yeah, but look, scrimmage is sure, but I don't think you need to play quote unquote regular season games that count. If you want to do some preseason games where, you know, the Lakers and the Clippers play each other just to break a sweat and get some game speed back, great, but there's no reason to play regular season games.
Well, that's what I mean. Whatever you want to call them, they need to do
that. I don't even want the preseason games because in a normal preseason situation, you still have the luxury of 82 games to fix if something happens unfortunate from a preseason game. In this situation, I want every single minute to be used towards something that counts and not something that could lead to potential danger.
George?
Yeah, look, I think that you could do a little bit of both, right? You could play five games and they count for the regular season. Like, you could play out five more games that were on your schedule and treat them like exhibition games, but they do count in the standings. Like, because most of it was decided, to your point, Travis, but there are probably a couple of races here and there, like seeding, that could still be decided potentially, particularly in the West, like in the middle.
Is it, George, we were kind of putting the two things together, the baseball and the NBA topic that we're talking about right here. When we crown a champion in the NBA, when we crown a champion in the World Series, is there an asterisk, or is this just that, you know what, everything is crazy in 2020 and we'll all remember that, but it's all, I don't want to say legit because it's obviously legit, but there isn't any extenuating circumstances. This is just what everybody had to deal with.
Travis, all you need to know about 2020 is that the Navy has discovered UFOs. That's all I need to say. So at this point, you know, you just chalk it up to 2020. That's all you
George,
need.
I didn't need the Navy to tell me that they're out there. I knew that they were out there already. I'm a firm believer. I don't know if they're little green men, but stuff is in the sky 100%.
I just hope and you guys, I'd love to hear your thoughts. I just hope they're more the Space Jam kind and not the Independence Day kind. if I were hoping for the aliens. Key, LZ, are you in on the aliens and the UFOs?
No, I don't mess with that stuff. Is fake.
Fake. Put it this way, George. We don't even know all the species that's located in the Amazon.
Or the ocean.
I'm pretty sure. Or the ocean. So if we can't figure out what's on our planet, how are we going to talk about what's not on some other planets?
Yeah,
I'm full on board with the aliens. I would prefer the Space Jam version, but if we got to go hostile aliens, I want the small hostile aliens that have to be in giant robots. You know, like the ones for Independence Day. I don't want the ones that are just big and will beat you up no matter what they were wearing.
Like Predator.
Well, look, like I got Predator, bad news, exactly. Guys. They're here and we're not there, so they're ahead.
George Sedano.
Yes.
USC history of wide receivers, Miami history of wide receivers, Tennessee's history of wide receivers, Ohio State.
Whoo! I mean, most recent, it's got to be Ohio State, right? But, like, you're talking all time?
Yeah.
Man, I would probably say all time, it's either USC or Miami, all time. But Ohio State more recent.
Ohio State.
Chris Carter.
Deep.
Chris Carter.
Carter.
Who
Paul
else?
Warfield. Michael.
Oh,
Thomas.
That's right. You know what? I wasn't going back. I wasn't born yet. I'm going to use your analogy there.
But we got. We
if
all
you
got
didn't see it. It didn't happen, George. That's
exactly.
Rule.
That's Key's rule. I wasn't born yet when Paul Warfield was in the Super Bowl.
Babe Ruth is black, by the way.
Coming up next. We'll see y'all tomorrow morning at 6:00.